Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you had an okay week. This is a pretty big episode. It's episode 100. And as you know, numbers shouldn't matter, but they do. I honestly never thought we'd get here, so I'm kind of amazed. And I want to say a huge thank you to you. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you, not those guys. You. You for listening, because I would not be able to do this show without you. And I would not have learned so much about my grief and all sorts of amazing people that I've met along the way who have helped me and hopefully helped you along the way. So thank you so much if you have listened or tweeted about it or told a friend about it or left us a lovely review. Genuinely thank you. We haven't got a letter from the Queen yet, but I assume I was gonna say she's gonna wait till we're dead, but that's not how it works, is it, Carrie? You've turned 100. We should have a damn letter from the Queen. Anyway, thank you so much. Thank you. To celebrate episode 100, our guest this week is a very special lady. She is the incredible broadcaster, writer, podcaster, Fee Glover. Fee has worked on all sorts of radio programmes. She's worked on BBC Five Live, she's worked on Radio 4, she's the host of Saturday Live, she's the host of The Listening Project, and she is also the host of the very, very excellent Fortunately podcast, which she co-hosts with Jane Garvey, and I cannot recommend it enough, as I say a lot of weeks. It is a really, really lovely podcast, genuinely charming, funny and interesting, so if you're looking for a new one, I would recommend that. Fee came in to talk to me about her dad, who died 15 years ago. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with broadcaster Fee Glover. Hello.
Hello.
Your voice is so nice. Like, as soon as you talk, I feel like, it's a great voice, Fee.
Do you want me to say some really offensive things so that you don't think it's
just
like,
awful, isn't horrible? That weird? You could just say anything that's happening now. And
I could just read all of the front pages.
Yeah, you could just say Parliament's been prorogued. It would be like, I'm going to be all right. Yeah. Do you think your voice has got better because you've done so much broadcasting? Or do you think it was just always a really nice voice?
Well, I don't think it was. I never thought, oh my goodness, I've got a great voice.
Yeah.
You know, I must milk this for my mortgage. But I think there's something about women having deep voices which is more appealing than women having high voices. And in fact, somebody contacted me once to say they were writing a PhD on that very subject.
Wow.
And would I like to participate? And of course, the gag goes, I said, no! Thank you.
That's good. That's a very good gag.
Terrible.
I didn't see it coming. I thought it was going to be.
But I think I smoked a lot.
Same, a lot. And I, it def, because my voice is high-ish, but the smoking took it down.
Yeah.
Not to promote it in any way.
No, of course
but
not.
But I smoked. How much did you, were you on a day?
So I started smoking, and kids, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it, because you
well,
just...
Well, they're all vaping now.
Well, they're all vaping, and if, do you know what? Vaping, shocker, not good for your lungs collapse. Well, who thought that putting perfumed liquid into your lungs at a very high temperature
if
might cause
smoker,
some distress?
As soon as you saw that vape, you were like, that's the same shit, guys.
Yes.
Like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, that is not okay. I know bad smoking when I see it.
Yeah, and also because of the puffs.
I mean,
the amount of puff that's coming out of that stuff.
It's not good. Yeah. Not good. But yes,
so I started really, really young, like 13.
I was 14.
Oh, well done, baby. I mean, it was so powerful. You're quite a bit younger than me. I think you're about 10 years younger than me. But it was so, it was still so ridiculously cool, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Oh my God.
In our youth.
I wanted to be Audrey Hepburn.
Yep.
That's
everyone
exactly.
was still smoking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not, it isn't cool anymore, which is great. And also, we grew up when you could smoke anywhere. So,
yes. You didn't have to stand outside with the losers.
No, exactly. Yep. You just went, you know, just if you could get into the pub in the first place and then have a cigarette, you were basically a grown up.
Yeah. Like. When I first came to London, which was when I was 17, which is 33 years
wow.
ago. You could still smoke on the buses and on the tube. It was before the King's Cross fire.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, you go down on the tube. And sometimes I do think about that now. I think how insane we were to think that that would never...
cause a problem.
You know, cause a problem.
Oh, it's
or,
mad.
Or be bad for you.
I know, my mum used to say there was smoking carriages on the tube.
Yes.
And she said if you had bad luck, you know, you couldn't get a seat anywhere else. And she said it would open... and then this cloud would come out and you think, oh. And she sort of socially smoked, but she was like, it was really horrible.
Well, I think even non-smokers socially smoked, didn't they? Because it was just all around them.
God.
I mean, you just couldn't help it.
Couldn't help it.
We had a kind of transcontinental upbringing because my dad went to work in Hong Kong when I was quite young. And we did these enormous trips, you know, back in the day. Nothing glamorous about it at all. And my mum was a vehement, always has been, anti-smoker. But quite often we'd get put... the row before
the smoking
row started, which was basically like the smoking row.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sign that's still on planes.
I know.
I mean, they're still
smoke.
Making planes
I
that
know.
Have the no smoking sign.
Take it off.
It would flick off and literally the whole of the back of the plane would light up and just chain smoke their way through a 24-hour flight with four stopovers out to Hong Kong. My poor mum, you know, I do look back on it and just think we were... you know, there was death hiding in plain sight and we were all just going, I'm sure that's fine. I'm sure that's fine.
Which is what we do now because it's like, how do you survive as humans? You sort of go, probably be all right.
Yes.
Probably, I guess. If I had to cross this road, probably be okay. I know. My mum's best friend still smokes and she is Danish. And when we used to fly to Denmark, we had to sit in smoking to go and see her. You know, they go for holidays together. And I remember even as a child thinking, God, it's a bit stinky in here. Like, this is quite, like, and again, they just used to pull the curtain across, didn't they? That'll do it. That'll
what madness.
I know. And so you are also obviously very known for your broadcasting, but I should mention, because this is a podcast, and now co-host of the incredibly successful Fortunately podcast.
Yeah, that crept up on us, didn't it?
You will. It's like the joy of podcasts. It's just so... It's so nice to hear two people sort of just having a chat about
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
I love Fortunately so much. And I've had the privilege of going on Fortunately.
Well, you were terrific.
I was very excited to be there.
You made Jane and I feel... Well, actually, I should never speak for Jane. You made me feel particularly thick, actually.
No,
because you do that rare thing, and I'll fangirl you for a moment. But you did that... rare thing where there are so many things that you could have talked about with us, you know, that
do
you
an opinion
do.
On everything.
Yeah, no, but and you could have been you know, kind of quite grand, and you're just not, are you? There's not
no,
there
not
doesn't
very good
seem
at being
to be
grand.
Any all self-deprecating humble braggy type stuff going on. So you were an absolute delight to have on.
I was, when they asked me to go on it, when, you know, it goes through your people, I was like, Fortunately, oh my God, yes, just went, like, I'll do any day they can. I was so excited. I was so excited. But
do
you know what?
We've been really lucky with, fortunately, because we arrived on the scene after the frontier people like you had done all the hard work.
I just got in, perhaps, when did Fortunately start?
So we started 2 years ago.
Oh, you say,
So no, you were, because I remember coming to the awards ceremony,
the one
where you won everything.
Yes, I do remember that one. Yes, that was very nice. I liked that one. It was really fun.
And we were we'd only just started, and we'd been nominated in the Listener Award. It was quite funny, actually, because they did this thing, thank God they dropped it in subsequent years, where they did the top 10 nominations in the Listeners Awards right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then they said, like in Family Fortunes, they said, and take away 7 of the wrong ones, leaving us with the 3 top ones. And this was right at the beginning of a 2-hour ceremony on quite a hot night. Off went Fortunately.
Oh, no!
And I was there in the front row just thinking, oh, my God, this is excruciating. It's excruciating. And I've got to sit through another 2 hours.
Yeah, and you've got to sit there.
So we were very new and babyish then. And there was quite a feeling in the room of, I don't know what to call it. It was antipathy, I think, towards the BBC starting to do podcasts.
I think, yeah, there was definitely a wariness of like, oh, I see. Oh, they big boys have rocked
up.
But now I think it feels, you know, because podcasts, everybody does want to do them. And the joy of it is that you go, it's not, people think it's easy. It's like, oh, those idiots are doing it who don't have any backing behind them. So anyone can be doing it. And what you realise is, like, it doesn't matter who you are, you have to have a good podcast for it to be successful.
Yes,
so
content is
fortunately,
king.
Yeah, fortunately works because of you and Jane and the dynamic and your personalities and your experience. It doesn't work just because it's a BBC podcast.
No, but we have been lucky. Undoubtedly, I would say that.
Well, it's a brilliant, I absolutely love it. If you haven't listened to it and you want some cheering up after a grief cast, head to Fortunately. Because it's so nice. It's such a nice, comforting listen.
It's very kind of you to say that.
No,
it's about the reality of life, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why we like it.
Yes, we say it's not frothy. It's just, it's always, it always makes me laugh. So obviously it's not, I'm not here to tell you how much I love you. As nice as it is.
Thank you. I've enjoyed that enormously.
Who are we remembering today, V?
We are remembering my dad.
Your dad. What was his name?
His name was William Henry Glover.
I get teased for this all the time because I always love the names. Every episode, someone tweets me going, have you ever not loved the name? But that is a great name. He always sounded so amazing. William Henry Glover.
So he was always called Bill. He was known as Bill.
My granddad was Bill. I love that
Bill's
name.
Oh, Bill's a good, aren't
it's
they?
It's so good.
Yeah.
They're always solid, nice, cheery people, I find.
Yes, there are a couple.
Yes, that's
that
true.
Slightly don't fit the
Let
bill.
The bills down.
Yes. So he died nearly 14 years ago.
Quite
a long time ago.
When was that, just to get my...
So that was 2005.
2005, thank you.
Maths is not.
No.
Carrie Ann Strongpoint.
You say I can talk about anything except maths, honestly. Okay. That's absolutely my kryptonite. So 2005. So, and where, what time of year? Like,
so kind of this time of year. Well, a little bit further down the autumn
line. So you're coming
line.
Up to your anniversary.
Yes, so he died in November 2005.
So you're coming up to 15 years.
Yes.
How are you feeling about that?
Oh, just so strange, actually. So Dad is the first person who I absolutely loved, who I've lost.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And it is just so true, and I know so many of your participants say the same thing. You don't understand grief through somebody else's experience of it, or through someone else telling you about it, or even loving someone else who's going through it. You only experience it, you know, firsthand. So it amazes me that 15 years on, I still have just an enormous sense of loss.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. You think it goes, and I wonder sometimes whether, you know, we're told that grief changes, aren't we? Because otherwise you'd be unable to cope with
it. Yeah, yeah. If it stayed like that first year, you literally wouldn't, no one would work.
But I think we talk about it so badly in our culture that we haven't really reassured people about the path it takes. So it's a weird one, isn't it? Mm. So 15 years on, yes, I still do just feel... I think of him so often, and that's the other thing that catches me sometimes. You know, I think he's more in my thoughts now than he was when he was alive.
Yeah.
It's strange,
it's
isn't
really
it?
Strange. It's really, and like you said, until you've experienced it, I think it's very hard to get your head around. Because I think if you haven't experienced grief, you think, oh, well, people die, and then you kind of move on, don't you? And you don't... But that's the same as, like, if you've never had your heart broken, do you know what I mean? Like, you'd be like, well, you know, they don't want to go out with you anymore. And then what? You get over it. It's like, and then when you're in it, you know, humans don't work like that. Yeah. You know, that's not how human. I also found, which I don't know, it's just me, I found the big numbers really difficult. So I found like 5 years, 10, 15 and 20, just for some unknown reason. And I was so cross about it because I was like, why does it fucking, what is, you know, 19 to 20, why should that matter? But I found 20 so much harder than 19, as in the years that he'd been dead, because it just felt really significant somehow. Yes. And it feels really like you can't help but do that human thing of looking back at what's happened. And the 19th anniversary, I remember finding, you know, sad, but okay. But 20, I was like, oh, like, it just, like you said, was so raw again, that sense of loss and all the pain. And I was like, why is a number of...
So do you think that's our anniversary culture? Do you think that's just because we do...
Yeah, I think as humans, we look for patterns. And I think there's something about those numbers that allows you a kind of review, isn't it? It's like, yes, you know, we all would say, well, gosh, we've been friends 10 years and what have we been through the decade? You know, we like to look back at a nice, neat pattern. And I think somehow when it's a sort of neater number, you know, like I remember the 18th anniversary being like, oh, it's been 18 years. Oh, okay. Like, that's like almost a whole person and that's like an adult's life. But, oh, I can't really think about it. But 20 was like fucking two decades. Like, yes, it sort of made sense.
Easy number.
Yeah.
Full force. So how old were you when your dad died?
So I was 15.
Yes.
Yeah. So I started
so
early.
You can also, but also you can easily do the numbers on that, can't you? That's,
yes,
unfortunate,
yeah,
isn't it, with
it
your
is,
poor maths?
It is, especially my poor maths. But it has, yeah, definitely made it, like, every time I've been not sure, I've always been like, oh, yeah, God, 50. Yeah, it's very neat. Although I was about to turn 16, which I can't tell you how that throws the maths for me. Makes it quite difficult. What did he do? What did Bill do?
Oh, so my dad was originally in the army. He, wow, came from a family where everybody was in the army. He just went into the army. And he did very well. I mean, I think he had a great time, but he didn't want it to be his life. So he left when he was in his early 30s and he sold life insurance.
Oh, wow.
He was a man around town with a briefcase.
Wow.
And he did that for a couple of years. I think Dad was very charismatic. Mm. He had a real...
You have to be to be a, yeah, salesman. Yeah, yeah.
He had a real twinkle in his eye and he was a really incredibly affable man. Mm. Really, really good fun to be around. So it was quite a natural fit for him and he did very well. Mm. He did very well. So he worked for Sun Alliance.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And... then he lost his job. And I think, I mean, this was around 1974, so everybody was losing their job.
Yeah,
it was really,
yeah,
really tough times. And he got offered a job in Hong Kong to go and work for one of the big finance companies over there doing the same thing. And he just embraced it.
Wow.
I mean, there just wasn't going to be any other, yeah, work on the table around here. And he'd been born in India.
Oh, right, wow.
You know, his family had been, yeah, stationed over there. In the army. So, you know, he had had a different kind of life,
yeah,
actually. And I think going abroad, I'm not sure he really saw it as going abroad, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just going somewhere else.
Somewhere
and that's,
else.
You know, that's what you do. So anyway, he worked in finance all his life.
So did you grow up in Hong Kong for a bit?
No, not really. We did go and live there for a while when he first moved over there. But my mum didn't really like it.
Mm.
I mean, it was a hard life for expat women, mm, then. I mean, nobody had a job and, you know, mum's,
yeah,
quite a busy person and she loves all of those outdoor things,
yeah,
and, you know, we were living in a block of flats and it drove her a bit bonkers, I think, actually. So we came back and we did that thing which wasn't uncommon at the time at all, where you know, Dad just stayed working abroad.
I had a friend at school who did that, yeah, in
and
Hong Kong, yeah.
Yep, he came back,
yeah,
you know, during the summer and, you know, we didn't really bat an eyelid at it. But it's quite strange looking back on it now, actually.
Yeah,
it's quite odd to have a totally absent parent,
mm,
for such... I mean, he never, you know, that he never came back from Hong Kong.
Oh, wow.
In the time at which I was living at home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was always over there.
And so did that affect your relationship in a way? Did it, like, make it closer because you missed him, or was it more like...
Yeah, it's got a good question. So I think now, with the benefit of hindsight and being a mum myself... And my kids are relatively old now, mm, so I've got a teenager and a preen. I can recognise that there is a distance between you if you're not with your kids all the time. Much of parenting and family.
It's like the day-to-day detritus.
Exactly, isn't it? It's just all the, you know, it's just the fluff around, you know, all the big things. But I never felt, you know, I didn't feel distant from him. But when he came back to this country after he'd retired, we had a really lovely relationship in the last kind of 10 years of his life.
That's amazing that you didn't, that it hadn't sort of caused a rift in any way, and it had, and you were able to sort of find that. That's
lovely. Well, I think part of it was just because it was such an accepted thing for him to have done.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think because he wasn't with his parents very much when he was young, you know, they were stationed all over the place. And, you know, I think it was just, he kind of, in a sense, he knew how to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we weren't sold this thing of, you know, somehow you're missing out.
Yeah.
You know, it was just accepted that, you know, that's what we did. But definitely when I really got to know him better in those last 10 years, it sometimes did make me sad, much sadder than I had been during my childhood, that he hadn't been around more. Because he was also just really good fun, Kerrod. Yeah. He was really, really good fun. You know, he just had a really great sense of humour. He was a laugh to be around.
So, what did he die of? What was it? Was it?
Oh, my goodness. So he just went boom. So
are you joking?
Yep. Just all of a sudden, he had a heart attack. Yep.
What, so completely no health problems before particularly?
Well, I think he had, I mean, he was 72. So I think he was on statins. And,
right, you know, yeah. But nothing like, but nothing we're worried major. About him.
Nope. Nope, and he'd been a really, really fit guy.
Wow.
So he'd, I mean, he always was running or doing something. He really loved his golf.
Wow.
And his gardening when he'd retired, and he was really fit and healthy. He was also quite an imbiber.
mm-hmm. Yes, I know what you mean, yeah.
And I think he'd amazed his doctors over the years that he could really, you know, pile it on as much as he did and, you know, still be as fit as he was. But no, he suddenly had a massive coronary.
Wow. And so did you get a phone call out of nowhere? Like, how did you
Yes,
find out?
Oh, yes. But not that he had died. So he, I mean, he was lucky. He was in Guildford at the time with his wife, my stepmom, and he had this massive heart attack. And he was taken to Guildford Hospital, and he was in intensive care for about a week. So I got a phone call at about 2 o'clock in the morning from my sister, who my stepmother had phoned, just saying, this has happened, and he's in intensive care. And I really can't remember. I was trying to think on the tube coming over here, because I knew that, you know, you'd ask me about that. And it's funny, isn't it?
It's just such a blur, isn't
it? I've etch-a-sketched the sequence of events and that particular thing, because you'd think that that would be a phone call that you really remember.
Yeah.
But actually, it has gone. I think
your brain often makes a choice to either burn something completely so you cannot let it go, or it's a blur. I remember the other day, I always talk about my dad's funeral, and the other day I was like, where did we go? Oh, we went to the crematorium. Like, I literally had forgotten going to the crematorium, and I can't remember what happened there.
And do you find that things then somehow, you know, they slip out of your memory and then something else will pop back
sometimes
in?
Sometimes it comes back a bit, like, when it's only because I do this show and I was like, I'm always talking about the funeral, and I had to sort of question to myself, I was trying to remember the day, because I was same as you. I was thinking, God, you think that day would be burned into my memory? It was very blurry. Bits of it are very clear. And then all I have is like a sense of like going into the building, but that's it. But I guess it was just so upsetting that my brain just went, nah.
Yeah, I'm not having that in here.
We don't really need it. You don't need the visual memory. What you have is the emotional memory of like, oh, that was horrible. So perhaps it's the same with the phone call. You remember the feeling of like, oh,
yes,
the phone call,
I
have to get there. But the rest of it, your brain probably went, well, that's not important, what you're wearing, where you're standing and what they said. What's important is how it affected you at that moment.
Yes.
But people seem to go either way from my chats. Either it's like you can remember every single pinpoint detail, or you're like,
Yeah.
I can't even tell you
I remember such weird things about that week. Really, weird things.
So you
really
went in to see him. Was he conscious?
So no, he wasn't. And he never regained full consciousness. Mm. But he had that kind of semi-consciousness where, I mean, again, it was just quite funny. And I hope, you know, he's up in heaven looking down and he's probably fully plugged into the podcast. Although swearing at the fact that he's got to use technology to get to it.
Yes,
if I'm honest, Carrie,
he
won't be thrilled with that. But I think he would laugh at the fact that it's really interesting. So, I mean, he had a massive stroke. So his brain was really affected as well as his mobility. So he was in the ICU, but he could talk a bit. And he kind of knew who we all were. And we'd take it in turns just over the course of that week to sit with him, my stepmother, my sister and myself, which was really lovely. But these funny bits of his memory were coming back to him.
Wow.
So he kept on thinking that I was a representative from Sun Alliance Insurance. And he kept on saying to me,
oh my God, how weird.
Yeah, I mean, literally, so I think he thought that I'd come to see him or I was interviewing him. It was definitely that kind of slight office setup.
Wow.
Where he was saying, you know, and so I'm working for Sun Alliance and you are, and, you know, he'd asked me kind of these funny questions about where I was and stuff. And I guess, I mean, the way that I rationalised it was actually it was an incredibly happy time in his life.
Yeah, yeah.
When he was, you know, young and he'd just got married and he was doing well and he was in London and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And there was obviously, it was, you know, he was being kind of funny and charming.
Yeah.
And some bit of his brain had pushed that forward.
Strokes are incredible, aren't they? What happens
so,
to the brain
so
and what
strange.
Bits come forward and bits aren't there anymore. But how funny that...
And I found it quite difficult at the time.
Yeah, of course. At the time, that is really...
Yeah. And also, because it's just that very weird thing where you don't know whether or not you should play along with it.
Yeah.
Because you kind of think, you know, what I'm dying to say is, Dad, you know, for fuck's sake, are you okay?
Yeah, talk to me.
You're going to live. I mean, I was heavily pregnant as well.
Yes.
This is worth saying.
So how pregnant were you at this
time? So I was 8 months.
Oh, God.
At the time.
So, oh, my God.
I know. So my son was due in that week between Christmas and New Year,
right.
But actually came much later, which I think often happens when somewhat stressful incidents happen during pregnancy.
Yeah.
He was just like, no, I'm not coming out into this.
I think it's might wait a bit. So I think it's like, just calm.
Seems vaguely all right here. It seems terrible out there.
Oh my God.
I was very pregnant. You know, so there were lots of things I kind of wanted to reassure Dad that I was all right and the baby was all right. And do you know, it was so...
Was it your first pregnancy as
it
well?
It was, right, yeah. And it was so weird because... you know, the staff at the hospital, they were bloody wonderful. But also, you could just tell that they were a little bit worried, this extraordinarily heavily pregnant woman, you know, in a slightly stressful situation.
Yeah.
So everybody was there. But, you know, I did play along with the Sun Alliance interview thing because I just thought, well, you know, whatever makes you happy. I don't really give a toss. But it was very odd. It was very odd.
It's really, I mean, I know they have that with patients with dementia as well, don't they? Of like, is it too painful to say... No, you're wrong. Your brain isn't working. I'm not from the Sun. It's like to break it can be like very distressing.
Like sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Or
so
do you
like,
just guide them
go,
back
okay.
to bed and say, absolutely, you're seeing 17 versions of Thierry Henry in your dreams, you know, whatever it is.
Dream.
Yeah. I don't know why I went there.
But that must have been, I just can't. To be 8 months pregnant when you are vulnerable because you've got this huge thing that you're carrying around and you are full of hormones and then having to deal with the trauma of your dad being sick. Like, that is such a lot to process.
Yes, although, I mean, I'm not denying that, actually, looking back on it.
But yeah, maybe at the time it didn't.
Yeah, Dad's timing was shit. I mean, you know, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's bad.
The time you don't. And I think because it was my first, so I genuinely had no idea what was coming.
Yes, true.
Yeah, which is a good position to be in, really.
If you're pregnant, switch off now.
please do.
Don't find out. You will find out, so you don't need
to. So no, it wasn't great. But you see, I was intrigued in what you said that, you know, of course it does happen to lots of people.
I get so many emails, I think, you know, an unusual amount of emails from people saying, I've just had a baby and I'm grieving. And it's so hard because everybody's expecting me to be happy and I'm not. And, you know, grief by itself without pregnancy and birth is fucking complicated and messy and, you know, layered. So I can't imagine what it's like to have to deal with a first baby and all of that hormones and difficulty and all the emotion that that requires on top of that dealing with grief. And I had a friend actually that happened to, and she said to me, I didn't know I was doing it, but I parked it. I just absolutely parked it. It's not similar, but it's connected to what happened to me. Because I was 15, I didn't have the language to deal with any of the grief. I just didn't have the words. So I parked it, but I didn't know I was parking it. But part of me just went, I just don't know how to deal with this. And then I just sort of carried on being a teenager. Who was obviously, I wasn't fine. I was still upset, but it was like the bigness of it kind of, I just couldn't deal with. And then slowly as I got into my 20s, it started leaking. That's how it felt to me. Like it just kept leaking everywhere and appearing. And then by the time, yeah, 18 years, took me 18 years, I was like, oh, I actually think I could look at this because I think I have to look at it. Like,
and so have you been able to kind of piece together an imagined timeline through your teenage years and 20s where you had dealt with the grief? Is it that easy to kind of, you know, pick apart?
Yeah, I mean, it's always complicated, but what's odd is I could, if you'd spoken to me at 21, I would have said, oh yeah, no, I'm great, I'm fine, I've dealt with it. If you spoke to me at 24, I'd have gone, oh, I thought I had, but now I have. And I think that's what grief does, is you, because it took me so long to understand. It wasn't until I did Griefcast that I was like, oh, it changes. It just changes. And especially if you're young, when you lose someone, you know, you're having to grieve for them as an 18-year-old, as a 25-year-old, like, and you're a different person, so your grief changes. But I sort of was thinking about it, and I was like, well, that's true of everybody. Mm. Everybody is, you know, you're very different now to you were 15 years ago. And that means you have to re-grieve that parent, because they're not there, you know, they're not there when your baby is small, they're not there when they go to school, they're not, like, all of these things have to be dealt with. So the grief, that's what it doesn't go away, it changes, you change, and you have to sort of meet it again, I
yeah.
think.
So do you find that all of those big steps with babies are hugely affected by your dad not being there?
I try not to, like, I get annoyed. You think, oh God, this again. Because I've had it my whole life. You know, I had it when I got my GCs, my A-levels, I went to uni, when I got married. You know, there's all these things that I've had to go, oh, he's not here. And then you just get a child and it's like, oh, it's a new person.
Yeah, it's a new not here scenario.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I don't want to say it gets easier, because it's not that it gets easier. I think what I always think is you recognise it more. So that's what I like, is that it comes along, especially after I had my first child, of like, oh, he's not here to see this. Like, you know, I didn't really, the wedding was just a day. Like, you know, it's okay. Like, it's a ceremony, isn't it? But like, this is a person. And then you start thinking about how great they'd be, you know, all of that stuff. And I just think you get better at going, oh, this is just that loss again. And I have to re-meet it and have a conversation with it again, which is annoying, because you'd love to think, oh, I'm done.
Yes.
That was lovely. I dealt with it. But you are always changing. That's what I'm sort of saying very badly, but you are always changing. So, of course, the grief is always changing and the world is always changing. The only thing that doesn't change is them, you know.
But yes.
Your relationship then, you know, if they were still alive, your relationship would be constantly evolving and might get worse, might get better. Like, you know, like you said, you suddenly get to know him as you're a bit older and you have to develop a better relationship. So it continues to develop, but even without that person there. And I think that took me a long time to get my head around, because I was like, well, they're gone. How can I have anything to do with them? And it's like, you can still have a relationship with their presence.
And do you mention him?
I do mention him, yeah. Place? It's hard at the moment because she's just a bit too young. But we do, because my husband has lost both his parents.
Mm.
So, yeah, we're quite the collection. I know, it's why I'm very protective of my mum. Don't go up that ladder. Don't even think about it. Yeah, she gets really annoyed. She always wants to buy ladders and get up them. And I do mention it a bit, because you want them to be aware of them. So I'm not afraid to say, you know, there's a picture, I'll be like, oh, that's grandpa. And she goes, all right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, or we have, you know, he'll be like, oh, that's, there was a picture of her, my mother-in-law. And I was like, oh, that's daddy's mummy, that's granny. And she was like, oh, it's granny, can we watch Octonauts? Like, you know, they don't, but I want the conversation to be present, I guess. I think that's important, to not be, I don't want her to go, oh, my mum's never mentioned her dad, so maybe I don't think I should.
Hold up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
How have you worked it with your children? Like,
well, you see, I think I've really overcompensated.
I think I probably will overcompensate, yeah.
So I definitely mentioned Dad way more than any other dead person in the world ever.
Where's your dad?
He's my dad. Yeah. So I do mention him, and very deliberately, because I really feel that's the one thing that I can't, you know, that I think I would just always be really angry about, that he never got to meet them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're such lovely kids. I really, you know, they're infinitely nicer than yours will ever be, Carrie Ad, or anybody's in the whole wide world.
Of course.
No,
of course.
I mean, I love them to bits, and I just really, I feel really, really angry. And it's not sad or anything kind of grown up or thought through. Mm. I'm just absolutely fucking livid that they never got to meet him.
But I think that's such a valid
emotion.
So
I mention him, you know, quite a lot. And sometimes I do check myself. But I love telling them stories about him. Absolutely love it. And it brings me enormous comfort to do it. And, you know, occasionally I can see their eyes glazing over as we're into the 43rd minute of the story. But I kind of think, well, actually, that's my prerogative.
Yeah,
if I want to just wang on about him a little bit too much, there's nothing else I can.
Yeah.
There's nothing else I can do.
But I think that's the thing, is that's what's so important, is to talk about it and to normalise it and to make that person still alive, inverted commas, by speaking about them. Because otherwise, then they really are dead.
Yes.
And that
and
is really sad.
I get really, really annoyed if people kind of get something about his life wrong. And our family is a little complicated, as many families are, because Dad was married three times and my mum was married, has been married twice, mum's still alive. And Dad and mum were their respective first marriages, so that was actually quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
So lots of other people have come on board since, and different things have happened and stuff. And I do find myself wanting to be incredibly exact about his life.
Do you feel like you're keeper of the flames slightly?
Well, isn't that interesting? Because I think we all do, actually. I don't think there's... I think everybody thinks that they, you know, everyone thinks that they are. And that's something that's not really talked about very much as well, isn't it? That strange hierarchy of grief. And I think it's really complex in modern families with lots of different, you know, stepbrothers and sisters and children and half-brothers and blended and this, that and the other. You know, there's almost a kind of dilution of who is the vanguard.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, at times I've definitely kind of had a harumph about, you know, somebody else knowing something or, you know, seeing an old friend or something like that. And I've felt like a child again. Just like, no, my dad.
But then I think that's so, just so human, because, you know, everyone always jokes, oh, when you go back to your parents, you behave like a child again. And it's like, you will always be a child to that man. Like,
yes.
That relationship will always be like that.
Don't you really, really miss that as as a new mum. I missed being somebody else's child.
Yeah.
Because you just really, I really, really wanted a dad hug from someone.
I didn't miss it, but I definitely felt like, I'd pass into a room I hadn't agreed to.
Oh,
like, as in, like, what? Where's the room where I'm not in charge? Like, where's the room where I go, oh, I can't do this, and someone comes in.
Yes.
And now you're in the room where someone's looking at you going, and I thought, no, no one warned me that door was one way and locked.
Yes, like, it is.
So that's how, But I think the dad hug thing's funny because he died when I was so young that I've never, I think I might have had to mentally lock that off a long time ago because it's so far away from me now, you know, 20 plus years that it's, yeah, I don't know. I don't allow myself to think about it like that because it's just, it's so far away.
Yes.
Like, yeah. And also because he died when we were in peak teenage years. So him hugging me would have been like disgusting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I go, poor man. I can't remember the last time he probably actually got a decent hug and a kiss off me without me being like, ugh, get off me.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because actually, hugging's very underrated.
Oh, so underrated.
It's really underrated.
So underrated.
And I milk every opportunity to hug my children.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, my God.
Grab them tight till they say, get off.
Yeah, they're already wearing, what is it, anti-climb paint. They've got anti-mum paint. Oh, get off!
I know. She's 2.5 and she's like, get off. And I'm
but
like,
the parental hug is just so, it's so wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, and I do miss that. Actually, I've felt a huge bonding with my stepmum over that because sometimes, you know, she just, I think, needed a hug.
Mm.
You know, her and dad, you know, it was just the two of them by the time they married. You know, we, Izzy and I, my sister and I, were long gone, left home, and that's so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're just the one person left in a house, because at least I did have a baby crawling all over me, and you know, and lots of other kind of attention. So
how did you cope with that bit? That, you know,
do you know
having
what?
The baby?
So I did. I just did that. That really old-fashioned stoic, I'm just going to have to
get on with it.
Ride this. I'm just going to have
and
to
so when did he
this.
He died in the November, and then your son was born in the January.
Yeah, so Dad died at the end of November, and do you know what? I was surprised. It's probably a bit naive, actually. I was surprised that he died. I thought he was going to survive and, you know, be very debilitated. Mm. I'd accepted that. But I thought I wasn't expecting him to go.
Wow, yeah.
So I do remember that second phone call where my sister phoned, again, really in the middle of the night. And she had been down staying with my stepmom. They lived in Hampshire. And she phoned and I answered the phone and she said, can you pass the phone to Rick, my partner? So I just knew, really. And then, you know, she obviously told Rick and just explained exactly what had happened. And it's, I mean, that's quite comedic in a way as well, because then of course he had to say goodbye and put the phone down and tell me what I already knew that she had just told him, but we managed it. So I didn't think that he was going to die. So that was quite, I think I'd got used to one picture in my head and then it changed again. But then that adrenaline of grief is so extraordinary. And it's like the adrenaline of giving birth, isn't it?
So
similar. I mean,
it
can just clear the decks of any other emotions.
Yeah.
So
it's very focusing.
It's extraordinary, actually, isn't it?
Mm.
So I remember doing that autopilot of, you know, getting up the next day, heaving myself into my enormous, disgusting maternity pants. And thinking, right, well, I'll just drive down to the hospital and, you know, sign some papers.
Oh, my God.
My dad's died. And, you know, you just do. And then you find yourself in that process, which is helpful, actually, all of those forms. And,
it gives it some structure.
And because you're with people who are just dealing with that all the time, so they're nice and don't say inappropriate things and stuff. But really weirdly, and I'm not saying this to milk sympathy at all, but I am a freelance worker, so obviously I could I knew that I was trying to save up for my own maternity leave at work, so I knew that I had to go back to work to finish doing the shows that I was meant to do, because it just meant so much more of my maternity leave. So I went back to work. I was doing broadcasting house on Radio 4.
Oh my God.
At the time. And that was a mistake, actually. And if I could just pass on the possibly the only certainty that I have, you know, about grief is if you're managing somebody at work who's lost a parent or a loved one, then go on a course or read a book or do something. Just recognise
what it does to someone.
Difficulty there. I think we're appalling in the workplace.
Well, I think we take the wrong cues. So if a woman who's 8 months pregnant comes in and is like, my dad's just died, it's fine, I'm doing these shows, everyone goes, well, she says she's fine.
Exactly.
So and they even though they said, know, everybody's looking, I don't think he is fine. But everyone takes...
Or just, I don't think that's normal.
No, and it's okay.
I think someone ought to say, that's not normal. Have your 2 weeks' paycheck. Yeah, don't worry about the maternity leave. You've been with the BBC a long time, love. We'll all cope.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that wasn't forthcoming. And actually, that was just because I remember being on air, actually. I don't think I've ever said this out loud before, but I remember being on air in one of those shows and just thinking, what am I doing here? I can't see the writing on the paper in front of me.
Did you have that thing where you kind of zoom out of your own life and you're like above your... I've had that where you're like above yourself thinking...
What?
I'm watching a film of this person thinking, get up and leave. Like, what are you doing? But I understand that autopilot so much. I went and did my GCSEs because it was just like, but the option of not doing it seems so much worse of like, because to not do it would be to admit he's dead. Something awful's happened.
Yes.
And I think some part of you is like, just keep walking.
And it is a survival thing.
Yeah, it is definitely.
Totally, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to do that.
And you almost, I think there's a sort of, how much can I just keep doing before somebody, before I collapse or somebody goes, you need to sit down. But it's like, you're so fragile. Everything's so raw and broken. And so I completely understand the need to just go, well, that's normal. I know the route to that work.
Yes.
I know where the tea is. Like, I don't know how I feel. I don't know what's happened. I don't know what the world means anymore. But sitting in front of, you know, the microphone doing my job, well,
you join in that pretense where everyone else is just going, let's type really quickly and just pretend nothing's happened. So you go, okay, I'll type faster. I'm going to pretend that nothing's happened. But actually, you know, crock of shit. I think it could have been more helpful.
It's difficult because I think some workplaces are better, but some are still shit. And I think you're right. Like, everyone should be trained on, you know, what it means to be dealing with a bereaved person or someone who's grieving. It should be talked about in schools. Like, but everyone just does that. Like, oh, like the person says they're fine, so it's fine. You know, and I completely... Did you go back for 2 weeks?
So I went back for 2 weeks. I did two final shows. Yes.
You're probably absolutely fine. Like, it probably was completely fine. It's just you feeling it, you know?
Yes. I did well. I mean, people complained all the time.
They complained anyway.
So they just added to the list. And then, you know, we had the funeral. And then we had Christmas. Again, I cannot for the life of me remember what we did that Christmas.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Things just blur, don't they?
So I know that, I would have been with my sister because we live very close to each other in London and she always does fabulous Christmases. So I think I would have been around there, but I can't remember if my mum came or my stepmum or both. Isn't that extraordinary? Mm. And there are no photographs because I was really, really fat when I was pregnant. I think people were scared to actually take a photograph. They didn't want to keep that image forever. And I didn't want it to be kept either.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are no photographs of that time either.
Weird,
it's
isn't it?
Odd.
Yeah.
Really
odd. I think
odd.
Sometimes as well, it's like any kind of capturing is admitting that it's happening.
Yes, and because you wouldn't do that group thing at the church, would you? Everyone bunch together.
All the family.
But it would be quite helpful if there was.
It almost would be helpful because then you could look back and go, oh, it happened.
And you could see in your face how you felt
God,
as well.
Yeah.
There's no record. I have no record, actually, of that time. It's very odd.
Yeah, that's really weird, isn't it?
But then all of these pictures of, you know, me and my, you know, in my very, very fat post-pregnancy state, still fat for a long time, and my extremely large baby.
Oh, is that
yes, which was just a whole...
And then how was that first few months then? Because obviously I think the first few months of babyhood are insane. And I've talked about this before, but it reminded me so much of grief. Like, that's what I found so weird.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was so similar. I was as emotional, as raw. People didn't know what to say to me. and I felt as isolated and alone as I had done when I was grieving. And part of me thinks, oh, well, it's a place I'm, you know, I go back to because it's like, oh, it's a trauma I understand. So it might be me making that connection, according to my therapist. But but also I think, you know, you are very isolated as a new mum. You're trying to deal with these things and it seems like the rest of the world is like on a lovely carousel having a really fun time and you're at home with this thing screaming, thinking, what the fuck have I done? And that's what it felt like when I was 15. Like, it felt like the world was carrying on having a party and I was just at home, but with, instead of the presence of a person, the absence of a person.
Yeah.
So I think they're very similar, but I can't, you were having to deal with both those things exactly the same time.
Yeah. So I've got no idea.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which, and I mean, I was really, really thrilled. I mean, I was very lucky. I didn't have any postnatal depression with Hecky. I think I did a bit with my daughter actually a couple of years later. But with Hecky, I think the adrenaline was still there. And, you know, that first baby thing is such an enormous shock. I mean, I know this might sound selfish or weird, but I'll just put it out there anyway. I do remember at times in those early couple of weeks when it was very difficult just being a new mum, actually feeling grateful to my dad, because I knew that my mind was in such a whirl about him, it almost helped to not be in a whirl about having a baby.
Yeah,
I remember
that.
Thinking,
yeah.
You know, kind of almost, God bless you, mate, because it's all come at once and it's just so difficult to understand. But I'm kind of, you know, I'm surviving everything. So that's a good thing, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't have that horrible dip that I know so many first-time mums have, when reality sets in, and also where you just feel very bad at something that you thought you were going to feel good at.
It's a bit easier.
It's really...
Yeah. Like, oh, this is really hard.
I've never understood those women who don't have that dip. Oh, anyway.
They're lying. But that's so interesting. I completely understand that because...
Do you?
Yeah, because grief, it clears the decks. And after my dad died, you know, the reason I could walk in and do my GCSEs and carry on was because it was like, who fucking cares? Like, who cares about anything, really? I've just discovered people die and what that means. And
So bring on your biology, mate.
Bring on that maths exam, which everyone says is going to fail. And I didn't, because I think I became, and we've talked about this before, of like, you sort of become a bit superhuman because it's like nothing can touch you because the worst thing has happened. And we've talked again, different guests said, it's almost like there's a bit of a fire, what you're saying, this adrenaline. And I know for those, I'd say for about 5 years, I was a bit untouchable because I was a teenager who didn't care what you thought of me. Like, I didn't care, which is so rare. You know, everyone was so, oh, what do they think and what's this? And I was like, I couldn't give a shit. I just couldn't give a shit because my dad's like, bigger shit is happening. And I think that's, so I can completely understand, like, with the, you know, new baby screaming, you can't sleep. You're like, but
my dad's just died.
So, you know, it'll sleep, it'll feed, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really...
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because I always did feel a bit guilty about having had those thoughts. It's kind of like, because, I mean, obviously I wasn't wishing him to be dead.
No.
And I really wish that he hadn't died. But I do remember thinking exactly that.
Yeah.
Just like, well, you know, thank you. This is good. I put it in the mix.
Yeah.
And look what I'm making.
And it's like, you said it's that survival thing of like, either you, I think as a human, you can be like, this either destroys me, like this either pins me to the ground and I can never stand again, or I drag myself out of this and that strength allows me to keep on walking. And it's really, it's not, you know, it's not fun. It's not easy. It's so painful. But there is a strength to that. There is. It does make everything else seem very minor. And that's why, you know, when I was, it was hard for me when teenagers would go, oh, you know, I like him and he doesn't like me. I was like, we're all going to die. Who cares? Like, who cares? And so I can understand the baby being like, so he cried. But we're all here, you know?
Yes.
We're all standing. Because it just makes everything so binary, I guess, doesn't it? It's like, you're either dead or alive, and that's basically all we need to worry about.
Yeah, yeah. And I totally agree with all of that. I mean, I think as well, quite a lot of people at the time, give me that kind of extra piercing look to make sure that everything was going
actually okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think in a way that's probably quite it's definitely a helpful thing because it could have gone really, really tits up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was kind of grateful to that. But also that sometimes does make you stronger as well, doesn't it? When you see people scrutinising
yeah,
you.
Yeah, concerned.
Concerned, then it's a little bit of the, well, I'll sit up extra straight, yeah. you know, and just make sure, you know, I'm kind of playing your game too. So I think, you know, I kind of skated by on the skin of my teeth there. But the thing that I did find incredibly difficult, you know, and I actually just wish had been different, was I think it's really, really hard to make new friends when you're grieving.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that you really need as a new mum is new friends.
Yeah.
You need to meet people whose babies are exactly the same age as yours.
Yeah.
No point meeting. If you've got a 3-month-old, you do not want to meet someone with a 6-month-old.
It's completely different.
Irrelevant.
Absolutely irrelevant.
So... you know, that chance to, I do remember looking on really, really enviously of, you know, groups of new mums in, you know, soft play or parks or cafes or, you know, whatever it was, all, you know, kind of jollying along with each other. And I just, that was the bit that I just couldn't do.
Yeah.
I couldn't sit in a room and just be, you know, happy and sharing and all of that. I was definitely locked in.
Yeah, definitely.
Locked into something. And as it turns out, and this is one of the things that you never realise before you have a baby, I didn't live anywhere near any of my friends.
Yes.
You
oh,
know,
my God.
When you're in London.
When you live in London, you think it's fine until you have a child and then you're like, then fuck, you're no
like,
one's here.
My God, I'm yeah. 2 zones away from my best mate.
No one's
How
coming
did
around.
I do that?
I know.
How did I do that?
Rookie error. Move near your friends.
Yes.
Yeah, I had exactly the same.
Did you?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. It's interesting of like, I found it really hard to make new friends. And I found it, yeah, like unbearably difficult. But I wasn't grieving. But in a way, perhaps, again, it's that thing of the way grief then rolls its head up and appears again. Of like, I did find the beginning really, really difficult. And it did remind me of grieving. And I felt very alone and isolated. And it really took me back so badly. So then when there were those women who can all make friends. Who are those women? All having a lovely time. And I almost felt like a sort of a clown, like I'd try and join in. Oh, she does that. And you could see them being like, you're not.
So no, I had exactly the same thing. Like, exactly the same thing. And I remember it was in the very early days of Mumsnet when I had my son.
Yeah.
And you know, it was such a new and daring thing. And you could, you know, you could go on a little chat thread or whatever, try and meet new mums in the area. So I thought, no, I must do this.
Yeah,
you know, I've been out of the house for a week. You know, I really must meet a new mum. So I contacted this when we arranged to meet in the local cafe. And I remember putting on makeup and a proper dress, putting the baby in the buggy and going down and meeting this woman who just looked at me just like, what on earth have you come as? But I just really lost that ability because I just had, my head was just too full of other stuff.
I mean,
it did make, it was that side of it really, really, really wasn't great. But I think, again, you know, just always trying to be positive. I was really, really worried that I wouldn't bond with my son because I think by that stage, you know, a couple of months in, it had really hit me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that dad had gone. So I was very worried about that, and that didn't happen. And maybe just actually spending so much time just me and him.
It's me and you, kid, because the other mums aren't talking to me. So
exactly.
That's what I used to think. Like, well, we're going to have to get on because no one else is talking to us.
You got no choice.
So
you're in a hostage situation here.
I'm afraid there's no friends for you. It's just mummy.
Yeah, so we bonded. We get
on. That's good. That's good.
You know, there is that. But yeah, it's not an easy time for so many reasons. And also, I think lots of people who I met, you know, other mums and stuff in those early, I just never told them. I just never told them. Because what are they meant to say? I remember thinking, what am I hoping to gain from telling people this? I don't know them. They're strangers. So I don't want them to hug me.
What's so sad for you is that you might have met someone like me who would have gone,
I know.
Oh, yeah, same. I've been through
totally.
That. And that's the thing. I think we get into this. No one needs
British
to know
thing.
This,
it's
do they?
Just bury it because it's difficult and we don't have this, you know, we don't have a good template.
Yeah.
And I became obsessed, a little bit obsessed. How unlike me. with the other grieving processes in different cultures, because they all seem to be better carried.
Yeah.
Every single bloody one of them.
I know. Well, there's lots of... I think whenever you read about other things, you're like, oh, we should take a bit of that and a bit of that. Yeah. What ones were you keen on?
Well, so I think the Irish wake.
Oh, The Irish do it so well.
Everybody comes round, you know, and you see the person dead, you know, so you properly, it's in there.
There's
it's
a reason
registered.
There's been so many Irish comedians on the show. Like, they're just like, they're happy. It's not like they've experienced death more. They're just easier to talk about it because it's present in their lives, and they've seen dead bodies from children. It doesn't. It's not a scary, like, oh my God, imagine seeing someone dead. Like, I think they do it much better than we
and
do.
And also, just that it's the time. That's the bit that that I would take from the Irish wake, from the Jewish traditions and the Muslim traditions.
Yeah.
They all have an allotted period of time, which is so helpful.
Yeah.
Because then you go, okay, I've got my 40 days of grief. And so I'm allowed to go completely mad and I wear black and everyone knows what's happened to me. Mm. And so for 40 days, I get the special grief sympathy and I work through all my shit and then I come out of the 40 days and I'm a different person. It's so, I imagine that would be so helpful.
But see, I felt like that because I was like, oh, to have an allotted time, yes, please. And someone at a live event came up and she was Muslim and she was saying, actually, it's really hard because after the time, everyone expects you to kind of stop talking about it because you've had it, you've had your moment. And she said that was the thing she found really hard. Like 6 months later, she was like, oh, actually, I'm still upset. And they were like, no, you've done it.
So
I know.
Not even that works.
And I hadn't thought of that because I was like, yeah, but you get this great a lot of time. And she was like, yeah, but it's so... And if you think about it as well, if you go into survival mode, you know, you might not... Time that they say, well, it's been your 40 days. You'll be like, well, I've only just started processing it, actually.
Yes, no, that's true.
So, yeah, we need an allotted, like a year. A year allotted to
be... But I do think all of those signs of... that you're grieving, we've completely lost those.
Oh, well, that's why we sell the badges, saying, like, please be kind, I'm grieving.
Yeah.
Because I just think, like, you know, my mum's the generation that had black armbands, and then as a child, I was like, oh, how strange. And now I'm like, yes, please, I desperately needed a black armband because I, like you said, I was the same. I was like, I couldn't say to people this had happened to me. I didn't know how to. And if you as a new mum had had some sign...
Imagine.
But I think that's good because then people like me who have no problem with it would have been able to go, oh, I'll talk to you about it.
I tell you what, the TikTok group would have scattered if I'd walked in my black sheath and veil.
Tumble Tots would have been a little bit more dour that day. And this is Fee, who is... Grieving? Anyone else grieving? Yes, having some troubles with breastfeeding? I would have been all
for
that.
You've got a cracked nipple.
I would have been like...
She's got a cracked life.
I would have been over the moon to find you in a play group.
Yes,
I would have been like, oh, someone I could talk to.
I wish I'd met you then.
Yeah.
But it's funny as well, isn't it? How little you understand that grief is a universal feeling.
Yes,
So actually it doesn't really matter at what time somebody has lost their parent in their lives. You will find that kind of commonality. And actually I really didn't know very many people who had, and
That's
I still don't.
Yeah.
So all of my closest friends, actually, no, apart from one, and she's had she's lost nearly all of her family. Actually, it's extraordinary she's still standing, but... Amongst my good friends, nearly all of them still have both their parents alive.
I find those people so weird.
Yeah.
So weird. I'm in an improv group called Ostentatious, and there's eight of us in this group, and we do improvise Jane Austen. It's very fun. But the moment I realised all of their parents were alive and all of them were together, that I was like, who are you? Like, where did we... How am I in this circle? Like, this is... And so in that world, I feel very strange. I'm like, oh, I'm the... You know, oh, that's happened to me. How strange. And that's why I do love the world of the grief cast and the griefers, because then you meet everybody's in your club.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, I don't feel weird over here, because I the same thing. I grew up thinking, oh, it's quite unusual what happened to me. It's very strange. And it wasn't till I did grief cards I was like, oh, so many fucking people it happened to. But because we don't talk about it,
you don't
get to
them.
Meet them. And I interviewed Jack Rook, who another comedian, and his dad died when he was 15, and he was the first person I'd spoken to that had the same mirrored experience of cancer at 15. And you know, that took 20 years to talk to someone and be like, yeah, me too. Oh my God, yeah, me too. And I couldn't believe how helpful it was to have that, to just have someone, you know, because there is that commonality. But obviously when someone hits your niche, it's like, oh yeah, God, you know how I felt. And as humans, we really need that. We really need to find that, those people who are, you know, in your tribe, who kind of get how you feel. And it is hard when your friends are still, you know, when parents are still going at bloody 90. You think,
well, I just find, I mean, I just constantly, because they slightly nod to it sometimes in conversations. So they'll go, you know, I know I'm lucky, but. And you kind of go, no, it's only taken you a second to say that. Mm. But actually, you really are. And you
fucking
can't,
lucky.
You can't. You know, you can't labour the point and stuff. But I'm constantly, I mean, I'm quite old now, you know, I'm 50. And I'm constantly surprised by, I don't know, it does keep you as a child if both your parents are still alive. And there's no prize for not being the child in the room at all. But it is quite, I do find it quite strange. I do find it strange that there are just so many parents around. Did you and your partner, had he lost his parents before you?
No, I was first.
Met.
And so then I'd lost my dad before we got together. And then he lost his dad probably about, when he was maybe 25 or something like that.
But before you got together?
Oh, no, we were together. We were together when his dad died.
Okay.
When I was all over that shit, I was like, got it. And his dad had cancer. And I was like, I know what to do. I'm here. Do this. And then when his mum got sick, I was like, have not been briefed for this. Do not know how to handle this at all. This is, like, very upsetting. And, yeah, I was so shit because it just was like, oh, this is really, really sad. Like, and yeah, losing both, obviously. And she died before we had our child as well. Yeah. So I think that's, for him, has always been really. And then I'm in a funny position of feeling very privileged that my mum's still here.
And she can still. You didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And that she can be a grandparent. And that's, you know, when we met, he had both and I had one. So I was like, oh, you don't know how lucky you are, you know. And that's interesting sometimes for me to remember that you can think, oh, people are luckier than you're standing there with the parents still standing. You think, actually,
yes,
I'm still the luckiest person in the world because she's still here. So, and she gets to be a grandparent. And that, yeah, as you said earlier, is a very difficult moment when, you know, they don't get that. Because it is such a sort of, it sort of feels like the prize for the end of all the hard work and the life and the raising of the children, doesn't it? You get to be a grandparent, which is like fun and easy. And I mean, I know it's hard work, but you know what I mean? It's like the fun bit.
Yes, no, definitely. People do seem to enjoy it.
Oh, V, thank you so much for talking to
me. Oh, no, it's an absolute pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure. And I'm really, really grateful to you because this is the first time I've ever properly talked about losing dad, you know, in my own way. You know, we talk about him not being around, but I've never ever sat down and had a conversation just about how I feel about losing him. So it's very kind of you. I do think this podcast, I think it's just fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's a tiny little miraculous thing and you do it very well.
Oh, thank you. My mum always jokes my dad would be so pleased I'm still talking about him. That's what I was. Oh, God.
Well, but that is the legacy, do you know what? And it needs to be, sometimes it needs to be in chat. You know, I know lots of people have got statues and portraits and all that kind of stuff, but there's nothing like just shooting the breeze about somebody's life.
Yeah, and remembering him. And, you know, Bill sounds like a really great guy.
Yep, he'd be raising a glass or two, actually.
Well, my dad would also
even though it's before midday.
Would happily be joining with
that. Do you think they're up?
Yeah, there's
up
definitely
there having a chink.
I would describe my father is an imbiber of many substances. So, yes, I think he would enjoy that as
well. Anyway, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. You can follow Fee on Twitter at Fifi Glover. And you can find the Fortunately podcast in all the usual places. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. And the show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios. The music is provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone. And thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.